past weekend. How about Reeves fighting Stevens? And there's the steal for the Big Ten steals leader. No finish, but the follow. Alley-oop Watkins. Tony Carr got it. He did turn it over. Josh Reeves. 14-4. Carr. Good from three. Jeff Garner, he can shoot it from deep. This time he's feeding Tony Carr.
It's loud, and they are feeding off of him.
Garner from deep. But the celebration is on. Some happy folks in Happy Valley. Penn State sweeps the Buckeyes. And here they come onto the floor.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever really had much momentum to us. Certainly that stunted kind of what we were trying to do, which is go inside early. You know, I don't think we ever had a point to that tonight where we were, you know, playing with the kind of emotion and energy that we needed to play against a good team.
Dropping it off for a shot by Donato. He scores! First Olympic goal for Donato. So the U.S. strikes first. For the second straight game, and now the Slovakians tie it just 25 seconds later. Down low, Donato. Donato with a shot. He scores! His second of the game on the power play. 2-1, United States. The United States with their first win in Pyeongchang. 2-1.
I think this is our 67th All-Star game, and in essence, we got together in over an hour and a half or so. We format, which is remarkable in this day and age. And I think what's going to make it so interesting, and we heard it directly from the players, is that it's going to create some new enthusiasm about the game, pairing different players with each other, team captains, of course, mm-hmm. creating, you know, a rooting interest for them. Guys, you know, a little sort of the dynamic of sort of how the draft went, who was picked on what team. Why I know it's going to be different is the players are so enthusiastic about it. And also, I'm sorry that Chris Paul didn't end up on the All-Star our team, and it's just the way it goes, but he deserves a lot of credit as well, because mm-hmm. I think, as I mentioned in the past, he was injured for last year's All-Star game, and he was the first one right sort of after the weekend to call me as the president of the union and say, I know we can do better. And in fairness to the players, like, nobody wants to get hurt out there, and mm-hmm. they also want a little bit of a break, but they want to have fun, they want to have an exciting game, so I think it's going to be great.
We believe that players who are major league players will eventually get signed, whatever that timetable turns out to be. And we wish them the best of luck in that regard. But I can tell you one thing for certain. The clubs have conducted themselves in a manner that's completely consistent with the agreement we made with the MLBPA. I believe all our teams want to win. That's why owners own clubs. It's about winning. I think our fans understand that the timing for individual clubs in a particular year may vary. They may not be at the point that their young players are ready to come, or that they have the group of young players that they think can actually win, but they're in a process that is directed at winning.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we are indeed live at 11 minutes after 3 o'clock on this free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. A lot of good stuff in the opening montage, a lot of stuff we're going to talk about, a little bit of Ohio State and the trash that they just threw onto the court last night. I mean, honestly, they just played like garbage. Best team in the Big Ten for the last month and a half or so. They beat Purdue and then just go out there for the second time. They lose to Penn State, second time in less than a month. Kind of garbage there. You heard a little bit from Chris Holtman about that, a little bit on USA Hockey as well, and I've got a lot to say about Adam Silver. That part of the story is coming up as well. But I want to take this moment to introduce and welcome our good friend and our producer, Jim Cushlin, who is out at Tam O'Shanter right now for the Toledo Golf Show that runs today, tomorrow, and through Sunday. And I have to admit, I am a little bit jealous, because I think I would rather be there during commercial breaks driving the ball into the video simulator and putting 320 yards up. No, I probably can't do that anymore. But Kush is out there having some fun at the golf show. What's going on, Kush?
Oh, enjoying it. I'm going to have to take a trip to that one, too. They're here. I mean, you name anything golf, and they are here just to open the doors for this first day's second, lined up pretty much all the way to the outer doorway, because anybody who's familiar with Sylvania Tam O'Shanter, the exhibition hall is in the back when you first come in. That's where the rink, the ice.
Around, yeah.
Yes, you got to go all the way around, and but the line was pretty long already, a whole bunch of people, and that About Golf indoor simulator, the Close of the Pin contest, is among the many, many great vendors out here for this weekend. You essentially name a golf course or a club club here in the region. They are here today. The 19th old craft beer here all weekend. You can get free subscriptions to Golf Digest. Even the Walleye and the Mud Hens mascots, they're parading around with their some of their antics all over the place. It's definitely a fun place to be.
You know what's really weird, though, Jim? I love having the golf show in February because normally it's freezing as hell outside. You know, it's Northwest Ohio winter and it's snow and it's ice. And you go inside and it's like, a sign of spring, golf. And you're in there and you're just kind of pretending you're out, outside and playing in the, on some of the simulators and, of course, checking out all the great merchandise from all the vendors. And it's just a reminder of spring. But it's so nice outside, really, yesterday and today, even though it's rainy temperature-wise. I mean, it really is like golf weather outside.
Yeah, all the snow is melted, so if you're brave enough this weekend, between the raindrops, you might be able to get in a few holes later this weekend.
Yeah,
certainly wasn't the case if
we're
open
or not.
And that wasn't the case if I was thinking back to where we were about a week ago, talking about all the high school games that were getting canceled due to the snow we had. And a week later, it's all gone. And I know some brave folks are going to hit some of these links coming up this weekend. But so much fun stuff going on. It's today, as you mentioned, tomorrow 9 to 6, Sunday 10 to 4. It's $7 at the door for adults, $6 in advance. Kids under 12 and parking, that is all free. And if you swing by our 106.5, the ticket table, kind of in the middle of the whole thing, you have chances to register to win a whole bunch of prizes. I will note, I am not drawing those today. Those will be drawn later tomorrow at the conclusion of the Great Lakes Golf Show. Mike Jameson and the crew, we're giving them 4 hours tomorrow, Bob,
that
instead of the
cool.
Normal two. But we got so many great prizes you can enter drawing winnings for. Russ's Auto Watch, Tony Paco, Smokey's of Barbecue Roadhouse, various pair of tickets to the remaining UT basketball games coming up at Savage, gift certificates to Splash Universe, Rockin' Whiskey Saloon, and a 6-person VIP pass to the African Safari Wildlife Park. Enter in the drawings, but you got to be here at the golf show at Tam O'Shanter. It is one of the more fun events on the calendar year, no question about it.
No question indeed, and I think that's awesome that you're there. And now, Kush, here's the thing. I know you got to go for it real quick here because you are going to be doing some Facebook Live events. So on our Facebook page, you are going to be doing Facebook Live from the Tam O'Shanter and talking to some of the vendors and people. What I want to know is, are you going to have the guts to step up to that drive, long drive simulator and smash it into the video screen on Facebook Live? Can we see the Cushlin driving form live on Facebook Live?
You know what? Now that you bring it up, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna go secure that. See if I can handle that. And luckily, it's a simulator, so I won't be on the beach on this one.
At least I hope not. But what it will show, if I'm not mistaken, because I've been there and I've done that before, it's going to show the distance of your drive. And
yes.
Are you gutsy enough to have, I don't know who's going to zoom in for you there or going to videotape you for the Facebook Live or have the camera on you for the Facebook Live, but zoom in on the distance of the Cushlin drive. Are you prepared? Are you man enough to show all of the Facebook listeners, the Facebook world, how far you drive?
Oh, absolutely I am. I don't think I'll be up on any long drive contest lists or anything like that, but I'm brave enough to take the club out and take it for a swing.
That's awesome. And I got to tell you, in full disclosure, that's kind of one of the reasons that I'm not there. I didn't want to have to do that because I've got a bad back and I would hit it like 74 yards. No, in all seriousness, it's a great time out there. Stop out today, tomorrow, and Sunday to the Toledo Golf Show out at the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter. And Cush, we'll check back in with you in about 20 minutes because we got a really good show lined up. We're going to talk a little baseball at 3:35, Tigers style. BlessYouBoys.com writer Brandon Day going to talk to us about the Tigers pitchers and catchers reported. This is one of the old adages where you need a scorecard. You can't tell a player without a scorecard because there's so many young guys. Obviously, at this camp, it's going to be a young rebuilding transitioning team, and we'll have a good conversation with Brandon Day coming up at 3:35. So we'll talk with you then.
Sounds like a plan. Talk to you guys then.
All right, good stuff. Jim Cushlin out there at the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter for the Toledo Golf Show. It's there through the entire week. And we gave tickets away for the last, 2.5 weeks or so to this thing. So if you've won them from us, stop by and say hey to Cush. Watch him swing the club. Report back to us what you see. I'm going to have to open a separate computer screen here so that I can watch Cush on Facebook Live and make sure that we don't miss that drive of his, whatever it may turn out to be. So Brandon Day, anyway. Tigers baseball, and there's a lot of Mud Hens, obviously, who are going to be reporting to Tigers camp, and we'll get a little bit of a look-see at these guys, the young transitioning Tigers, who, of course, blew up the club last year. The payroll is going to be significantly slashed. There's going to be young guys who are going to lose a lot of games. I saw, what did I say yesterday the Free Press headline was? And I'm paraphrasing it because I don't have it in front of me now like I did yesterday, but the Free Press headline was something to the effect of, yes, the Tigers will stink, but at least they know it, which is not much of a consolation in my estimation, but maybe it is a little, you know. I mean, if you've got a date, a first date with somebody, and you've already seen the picture and you know she's not Miss America, you're ready for it when you get there. Right? As opposed to somebody who gives you a picture or posts a picture when you get on one of these online dating sites, or somebody sets you up and it's a fake picture and you show up and it's not what you expected. That's disappointing. That's the Tigers. No blind dates for the fans this year. Nobody's going to be going in there thinking, you know, these guys might be pretty doggone good. We got a chance here in the American League Central this year. Nobody, and then see them, you know, lose, you know, 95 games or more. Nobody is going to be disappointed like that. I think everybody just expects they're not going to have the best experience that they've ever had watching Tigers games this year. So Brandon Day at 3:35. Then at 4:10, we get into college basketball a little bit more. Why? Because last night was goofy, right? Last night was goofy across the college basketball landscape. A bunch of teams, perceived top teams, went down. Oklahoma has lost now for the fourth straight game. Very odd. The Sooners had looked very, very good for a period of time. Trey Young looked essentially unstoppable for a period of time, but he gets into a cold rut. They lost again. The Big Ten got all kind of weird. Purdue, which was number three a week ago, right before Ohio State upset them, has now followed that up with a loss to Michigan State, which is understandable because Michigan State's a top five team. But then they just lost to Wisconsin last night. Purdue with a three-game losing streak. Again, all kinds of funky. And then, of course, the Buckeyes. No one saw this coming. We know Penn State beat them less than a month ago. The last time the Buckeyes lost was on that buzzer beater to Penn State. But and this one was on the road, so not saying that a loss is inexcusable. Certainly, losing on the road to a team that's a good team and a team that might just be a bad matchup for you, since they beat you last time. No, season isn't over because of that. Nobody's throwing fits about it, right? But the Buckeyes didn't just lose on the road at Happy Valley. They lost by 23. They got their doors blown off. An absolute just train wreck of a game for the Buckeyes. Kata Bates-Diop, who has just been, player of the year worthy for much of this, the last month and a half or 2 months of this season, as the Buckeyes went from unranked to ranked in the bottom of the top 25 to somewhere into the mid-teens to this past week as high as 8 in the country. Kata Bates was Diop was the main reason for that. Last night, 4 of 11, just 10 points and 5 rebounds. So something kind of just one of those nights, I guess. Jashaun Tate as well had just 6 points on 3 of 5 shooting. So just not a good night for the Buckeyes at all. And so anyway, we're going to talk bracketology. That top 16 or sweet 16 or whatever it is you want to call it, that the committee kind of preview 16 that they put out last week has pretty much just been busted already. That's kind of how brackets go, even if they're just pretend brackets at the beginning. They just get busted easily with upsets. Chris Daubertine of SB Nation writes college basketball for SB Nation, is their bracketologist. He'll be joining us at 4:10. And then at 4:40, there are brackets to be looked at on the high school side as well. Bill Clark will preview this weekend's games in the area for high school basketball and also look at some of the sectional matchups as the brackets are out. Now, since we brought up basketball, I feel the need to respond to this. If you listen to Wingo and Golic this morning, and I try to do that every morning, or at least on replay, it's a cool thing about the app. But if you listen to Wingo and Golic this morning, you heard them talking about Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, tried to, and did so in a very forceful way, defend something that I found to be really indefensible, and that is the fine of Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, you may or may not recall, Magic Johnson made some comments in an interview, a radio interview, a couple of weeks back, that were just simple compliments of the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. you know, somebody had asked him about his overall game, and he just was complimentary, saying that guy is the guy who's going to win a title someday. He's got all the tools, blah, blah, blah. Just really complimentary stuff. Now, we all know, well, most people know, that it is against NBA rules for owners or executives to tamper with other teams' players, right? There's tampering, I should say, that is illegal, and you can get fined for that. And if it's really bad, they can really do some damage to you and, you know, dock you draft picks and that sort of thing. In other words, Magic Johnson isn't allowed to say, man, I wish I had Antetokounmpo on my team. Now that would be tampering. Now that's sending a message out there to Antetokounmpo and his agent that the Lakers want you when your contract is up, or they might be interested in a trade, and those things are not allowed. And that is understandable. Magic didn't say, man, I'd like to have that guy on my team. Magic didn't say, boy, I can't wait for him to become a free agent. Magic just said, dude's a great player. He was fined and the Lakers were fined $50,000 for that. And I find that to just be ridiculous. Adam Silver was defending that this morning. They had that on Golic.
Not just Magic, but all the executives in the league is stop talking about players on other teams. We love having all these legends involved in the games, but the other teams seem to be able to follow those rules, and that is don't talk about players on other teams. I mean, incidentally, we could change that rule, but I don't think it's a good idea. I think that, yes, we'd love to hear players like Magic Johnson talk about how great young players are in the league, but there's enough commentary out there, and I think when unbalanced, just asking them to refrain from that one aspect of talking about other players isn't that big a deal.
I'm going to scratch my head hard enough to get splinters in my fingers, maybe that's what I am. Maybe I've got a wooden head because I can't process that in my mind. I'm trying to wrap my brain around that. He said we could change the rule, but I don't think it would be good because on balance, it's just good not to have executives talk about other teams' players. Why? Why? I mean, what's next? What about if Stan Van Gundy, who is not just the coach of the Pistons, but he is also the president of basketball operations, which makes him a team executive, what if he's asked in a post-game interview about, I don't know, how Larry Nance Jr. looked in the game that they just played? What if it's a post-game interview and Stan Van Gundy says, boy, Nance looked very, very good. He's athletic, he's long, and he gives you a lot of problems in the post, and he's a really great defender, a great help defender, and a rim protector, and boy, he was tough. Whoa! Whoa, 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 whoa! Coach Van Gundy, that was okay. But President of Basketball Ops Van Gundy, you just talked about another team, or another player. You know, if I didn't know any better, I might think that you wanted that guy to come and play for you. You can't compliment another player. That's how absurd this is. And I think Golic agreed.
I'm sorry. I still don't get it. He complimented him. He got fined for the Paul George thing of when he kind of, what was it? He was on a talk show, right? I forgot who it was with. Kimmel. I forgot who he was with. You know, saying, oh, if we ran into each other, we could only say hi, you know, wink, wink type of deal. You know, he flirted there with it and got fined $500,000 for it. He just talk more about a great player Antetokounmpo is. I think it's ridiculous.
But I could not agree more. Golic is spot on. It is ridiculous. And it just makes you wonder, what is the NBA trying to accomplish here? When he said we could abolish that rule, but I don't think it's a good idea, what exactly is Adam Silver afraid of? What exactly is, you know, are league executives afraid of? We live in a world of free agency. You know, players, whether they say it out loud or not, are always thinking, when my contract is up at the end of this year or at the end of next year or whatever, I wonder where I'd like to play. And in the same way, there are executives who are thinking to themselves at any given time, when that guy's contract is up, I really would like him to come and play. Or I'm considering which of these guys would I like to offer a contract to and come and play. It's on everybody's mind. But as long as they're not saying it out loud, now we're not even allowed to say their names. Again, how silly is it? Antetokounmpo is a great player. I don't have Magic's comments here. I wish I did. But Magic essentially said he's going to win a championship. He's a great player. He does great things. I think they may have compared his skill set to some other guys, maybe even himself. It's one of the reasons why he was asked. But all of it was just benign analysis of a player, not some sort of intentional public statement of interest, so that the here's the little whistle, the dog whistle, to let his agent know, hey, the Lakers, who wouldn't want Anthony? I mean, honestly, let's stop that. Let's stop and pretend for just 1 second that there aren't 30 teams counting the Bucks to keep him, that there aren't 30 general managers who would love to have Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is a rising star. He might be the rising star. It's a conversation we had on this program about, 2-3 weeks ago, and we talked about the great young players. Who would you rather have? Kristaps Porzingis, the 7'3" monster who's got a sweet, feathery three-point shot, or the freakish, athletic, and talented Giannis Antetokounmpo, or the multifaceted, almost LeBron James-esque Anthony Davis? You know, we talk about the Ben Simmons. We talk about these things all the time. These are great young players. Magic Johnson, as a team executive, has a vested interest in promoting the league and its great young players, right? I mean, I would like to ask Adam Silver if I can get him on. Adam, is it a positive thing or a negative thing to have your young stars promoted to the masses so that maybe people who live in big markets like, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, or whatever, don't pay a ton of attention to Milwaukee games? They might catch an occasional Giannis highlight, but you really want them to pay attention to these great young stars to drive up ratings and drive up interest in the league. What is wrong with having an all-timer, a legend like Magic Johnson, talking about a young star? Sure, Magic would like to have him. So would everybody else. All 30 teams would like to have him when he's a free agent. But we're going to fine Magic Johnson for simply complimenting him and thus, perhaps driving up his profile in order to help the league. It just does not make any sense. Not as far as I can find it, anyway. If you can make some sense of it, by all means, dial us up at 866-240-1065. So Magic Johnson got screwed in that deal. So did the Lakers. And so did Giannis Antetokounmpo, by the way, because everybody should be shouting his name. Everybody should be touting his abilities. And when he lands in a bigger market than Milwaukee, if that's the way things go, the world will be put on notice and say, and they would like to have said, that Magic Johnson was right. Too bad they fined him for saying so. All right, it is 3:30. Let me get a quick timeout because we are going to, I've got two things to do here. Correction. I got three things to do here. Number one, we're going to get a bottom-of-the-hour local sports center from Cushland, who's out at the golf show. Number two, we are going to talk to Brandon Day about the Tigers. Brandon Day of BlessYouBoys.com, that's the Tigers SB Nation side, as the pitchers and catchers are engaged in workouts. Full squad's going to be reporting over the weekend from Lakeland, so we're going to do that. Four things. Number three, we're going to get a wild stat here in a second, and then we are going to be giving away some tickets as well, because we've got Toledo Walleye tickets that we want to drop on you for the game next Friday, 1 week from today, against Atlanta. So all of that is coming up right now. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
It's not coincidental. It is a segue. Today's Wild Stat of the Day from Buffalo Wild Wings has to do with that freak, but not just the freak. Last night, Denver's 132-123 win at Milwaukee. One player from each side had himself a night. The freak went for a 36-11-13 triple-double, which is amazing. That's Giannis Antetokounmpo. Nikola Jokic had 30-15-17 in the game, and he had his triple-double completed by halftime. It marks just the third time in NBA history that two players in the same game had 30-plus point triple-doubles. The other two times, 1965, Dave DeBuscher, and then in 1961, or actually before that, in 1961, Johnny Kerr. I did that wrong. My apologies. DeBuscher and Kerr in the 65 game. 61, it was the big O, Oscar Robertson, and Richie Gehrig. So those are indeed some wild stats from the Milwaukee-Denver game last night. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day. Now we'll get our bottom of the hour sports center after I get you on the phone. 866-240-1065. Dial now. You want to go see the Walleye take on Atlanta? We will send you there. It's a week from today. And caller number 5. Caller 5 to 866-240-1065. You will take those tickets. Now the sports center, and we'll come back and talk Tigers baseball right here on the Ticket.
France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll along now at 3:40. Don't forget, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour of the program, we talk college basketball bracketology. Yeah, SB Nation bracketologist Chris Daubertine is going to be joining us. And then we talk high school bracketology in a manner of speaking, Jim Cushlin, right? We got sectional brackets that are out. In addition to games this weekend toward the end of the regular season, we got the sectional pairings announced as well.
Absolutely, we do. Yeah, all the districts for all the divisions announced for high school basketball. We're only a week and a half away, by the by, from those starting. 2 weeks from today, we'll have our first Bill Clark High School basketball broadcast, a doubleheader of the sectional finals. And one other side note, if I may real quick, you asked me about this last segment as I've been cruising around here at Sylvania Tam O'Shanter here at the golf show. Stop on by. It's a fantastic event up here at Tam O'Shanter. No, I have not swung it yet, but I'm here to announce that I have talked to the about golf indoor simulator guys. I will be trying this in the next hour when I'm done here with you guys.
I am looking forward to seeing that. I did see you pop up on my screen in front of me. Oh, Cushion's going live, but of course I was still talking, so I couldn't listen to you, and then I had to turn away, and I wasn't sure if you were swinging that stick or not yet on the big long drive. So we got to see. We need a number. We should take an over and under. I wish I could run some numbers here. just be an on-air bookie. How many? What's the over and under on the Cushion drive? I got it. Well, if I had to go over under, I would probably put the number at somewhere around 160, and I have to tell you, I'd take the under.
I'd like to think I can get near to 200, but I haven't swung a club in so long. I may be under that, under your projection.
If this was July and you were playing a little bit, I would take the over. But it's February and you haven't played. Really, any of us haven't swung it hard unless you go to a simulator and take lessons and things like that at various places. But you haven't swung it in a while, so I'm guessing you would go under.
I would actually even take the safe under on myself and hope for the best.
All right, Jim Cushlin is out there at the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter at the Toledo Golf Show. So go and see him. Stop by his table where he's broadcasting from and make fun of him once he tries to hit that long drive. Let's shift gears now and talk Tigers baseball as we have been promising to do. We stay with SB Nation. We're going to talk SB Nation bracketology with Chris Daubertine coming up at 4:10. But let's stay with SB Nation and blessyouboy.com. That is the Tigers page on SB Nation. And Brandon Day writes about those Tigers, who have reported, at least pitchers and catchers anyway, to Lakeland. Full squads expected to arrive this weekend. And we'll preview with Brandon. How you doing, sir?
Hey, real well, Bob. How's it going today?
It is outstanding. You know, it's funny. I was talking to Cushlin about this. He's out at a golf show right now. It's almost warm enough to actually play real golf outdoors the way it is right now in Toledo.
Yeah, the last couple, days actually have not been bad. I did go out to the indoor range at one point, and if Jim wants to post some video somewhere, we can do some swing analysis.
I love it. I love it. There you go. He's going to go Facebook Live and actually do this, just so you know.
Oh,
so
right.
It'll be live, but then it'll be posted, so you could break it down and analyze it. I think it would be hilarious.
It might be more interesting than the Tigers as well.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because the Detroit Free Press yesterday, Brandon Day, the headline, and I'm paraphrasing it, but I think I have it right. I just don't have it in front of me from yesterday. But I think the headline was, yes, the Tigers will stink, but at least they know it. And if that's the best, if that's the best thing you can tell fans, don't, at least you're not going to get your hopes up. You expect to stink. Then maybe you can tolerate the season. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, if you're a real baseball honk, this is actually going to be a pretty fascinating season. And you're also going to be able to find, cheap tickets down there on weeknights, especially. And there's certainly things to watch for, but yeah, if you have any hopes of the Tigers, like somehow being a long shot to sneak into a wild card or something, please, please abandon all hope.
Yeah, no question about
abandon that.
Abandon that right now. No question about that. So Brandon, what you just said though, I find interesting. If you're a real baseball hunk, you might like this kind of thing, because now, if you just like to go and cheer for victories, you're going to be very disappointed, obviously, and you're not going to want to come out to the ballpark very often. But as you say, if you're somebody who loves the analytics, and if you love watching the development of young players as they go from prospect to contributor, from contributor to productive player, from productive player to starter, this is where it's all being built, and these guys are being born. It's almost, young guys in their infancy, and you're about to watch them take their steps into toddlerhood, hopefully, by the end of the season, and that can be an interesting thing in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, the entire process of going into a full rebuild, as the Tigers have really started to do, it is worth watching. It's a pretty fascinating process to see how a team drafts, how it's able to develop young players, how it can kind of evolve its development strategy. This is something that the Tigers haven't been good at generally for quite a while, and because they've spent so much money and given away compensation picks to sign free agents. They haven't really drafted high, you know, in the first round in a long time. They've given away a lot of picks, and they haven't really been in a position to really build the farm system the way they wanted to. And they haven't traded too many players away out of the farm system in the past couple years. And the influx of players that they got in the trades over the last year have really given the Tigers like a really nice base of depth. And as well as a lot of really high-end pitching talent, we're still waiting for a few big bats. That's kind of the thing that the system needs more than anything is, you know, a couple middle infielders who can hit. We have a couple of pretty good outfield prospects in Daz Cameron and Derek Hill. We still have a chance to make it. But right now they've got, you know, they're really strong in arms. There's a lot of pitching talent to watch if you're in any of the minor league cities this year. There should be some good action at Toledo as well. And, you know, and that's the kind of thing to watch for. You know, there's still plenty to watch in the major leagues. Michael Fulmer, seeing whether Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd can take steps forward, seeing if Miguel Cabrera can rebound here a little bit. There's definitely things to watch for, but it's all about the farm system right now, and probably the most important thing that's going to happen this year, unfortunately, to fans who want to go down there and watch the team win, is going to be the number one overall pick in June in the draft. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of preview of that, but yeah, beyond that, it's just going to be watching young players develop and hoping, you know, we can turn some of the guys who are already on the team into more prospects and develop the guys that they've already got and seeing if those guys can come along.
Brandon Day joining us from BlessYouBoys.com, the Tigers SB Nation site. Jim Cushlin is out at the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter for the 2018 Toledo Golf Show. Cush, go ahead.
And, you know, thinking about some of those arms you were talking about, it's not really surprising news, but for what it's worth, Brandon, here in the early goings of pitchers and catchers only reporting, Shane Green named the Tigers closer. Side note, you're talking about some of those younger guys that are coming up through the system. This guy made a couple appearances in Toledo, Brian Garcia. He's out now with Tommy John surgery, so any thought of that as a young kid coming up this year, that's now out the door. Talk to me about those couple announcements.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Garcia, you know, he was the closer, at Florida for a couple years. He's a, you know, a really nice relief prospect who moved really quickly last year. So it's unfortunate to see him go down. Hopefully, you know, it sounds like it was a pretty clean tear. And generally speaking, they've gotten pretty good at repairing those these days. So, you know, you're not going to really see him until late next season at the earliest. So, you know, that's kind of unfortunate, but there are plenty of other guys kind of to keep an eye on. And yeah, Shane Green is one of the few guys who, you know, the Tigers are going to have this year who may still turn into a really good trade chip especially at the trade deadline. So, getting him off to a good start and, you know, and kind of racking up as many save opportunities as the Tigers are going to be able to give him this year, is going to be key because, you know, actually the best deal the Tigers made last season was the trade of Justin Wilson for, Jamer Candelario and a really nice shortstop prospect named Isaac Paredes, who went to West Michigan last year and just absolutely raked. So, you know, relievers are the currency of the realm right now, and we do have a really pretty good one in Shane Green. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be one to keep an eye on.
That has to be like, you know, and I don't know how old you are, but the, for anybody who's maybe over 40, you may remember the old Maytag commercials. The Maytag repairman, he was the loneliest man in the world. He just sat in a building because, you know, the inference was that the Maytag
didn't need any
never breaks. Yeah, the Maytags never break, so, you know, you just have a boring job. Is the new Maytag repairman Shane Green, the loneliest man in the world, has to be a closer on a team that might lose 100 games?
Yeah, you know, Gardy's going to have to be a little bit flexible in trying to get him some innings elsewhere because, you know, I mean, every team gets some save chances. I don't think it's going to be, you know, it's not like he's going to be sitting around for weeks at a time, hopefully. But he's not going to be overworked. I can promise you that. Yeah.
So you're down there. Are you in Lakeland right now?
I am not. I am going to go down there in early March. Right now, I am still in chilly Michigan.
Okay. The only reason I ask is, it's got to be tough for the people who are covering. You know, guys like yourself who cover either if you're a beat writer for a newspaper or if you're covering the team on a regular basis for BlessYouBoys.com or whatever. You're looking for storylines. It's day two or three of workouts, right? And you're looking for something to write about. There isn't anything yet, except for the news that Daniel Norris shaved.
Yep. Yep, that was the big news. And Travis Wood almost chopped his finger off with a crossbow string. So, yeah, we've had those two hot items to
kind of tear through here.
I was going to ask you for a little bit more in-depth analysis. I mean, the headline of Brandon Day's article from yesterday is Detroit Tigers news, Daniel Norris shaved, another important spring training note. So tell us, how does he look? Is he an electric razor man, or is he a straight or a regular razor man, a twin blade, or single? That's the goofy thing is in spring training. I mean, honestly, people are looking for anything they can to write about.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Gardy's giving his dad joke quotes and stuff like that, so we've got that going. I don't know if, you know, Daniel Norris, if you saw him before he shaved that beard, that sucker was so thick, I'm not sure that any kind of razor any of us are familiar with would have cut that thing down. He may have used an axe again, I'm not sure. But he's very, you know, he's a very handsome young man. He looks good. He looks better than I do.
I love that Evan Woodbury, who is down there, actually has a picture of him with the full beard, you know, the big old, you know, James Harden looking thing, and then or Grizzly Adams, depending on who you like, and then the clean shaven one. I got to admit, I like the beard. I don't know about you, but I'm like, bro, grow it back out. Lose the razor. Put away the weed whacker, whatever you did to that thing. Let it come back, because I don't know. He looked a little bit more, intimidating. He looks like a very young man now with the shave.
Yeah, he really does. You know, and the sad thing is we never got the Alex Avila, Daniel Norris beard off that we had all hoped for, you know, to see which one of them could grow the most beard in a single 24-hour period, because it was on either side. You know, you could go either way on that one.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. Guys like Norris, though, they look like if they just sat down and pushed really hard with their face, they would just push it out and grow it in as much as they wanted in a shorter period.
Some kind of a Play-Doh.
Yeah, he just
Play-Doh type
guys.
Situation.
Now, as far as Daniel Norris as a player, let's just hit this very quickly. You pointed out that he had a conversation in which he was talking about becoming a starter, and he tweeted, you called it very Verlander-like, I think it is. He's channeled this inner Verlander when he just tweeted very simply, I will be great as a starter. Is he trolling, or is this just a statement of his intentions to do just that?
Yeah, I think it's a statement of intentions. You know, someone was kind of talking about, maybe we should move him, you know, to a relief role. And this is just some random dude on Twitter, and he came back with that.
Oh, so that was a reply. That wasn't an unpopular thing. Oh, okay.
It was a reply. But he's, you know, he's an interesting guy, and he's going to be a key one to watch this year, because Daniel Norris is extremely talented, and he's just been kind of felled by all these nagging injuries, and he changed up his training pretty radically this offseason, got a lot more professional training. So he's going to be a key guy to watch. He's going to be an interesting one, because he still has the potential to be, you know, almost as good as Fulmer or even better. I mean, that possibility is still there, and I understand the skepticism out there, but you know, the guy's only 24 years old, so, we've got to give him another year or two as a starter and see what he's got.
Well, I hope nobody's writing him off, and maybe the Twitter user that he responded to got to him a little bit by saying he should go to the bullpen or something. You're right, he's 24, not 29. He hasn't been doing this very long. There's plenty of opportunities there. I agree. Jim Cushing, go ahead.
You know, thinking about this and where Norris might be in the possible rotation, another name that's been popping up here in the early going is Alex Wilson, the other Wilson who's still here, reliever last year. They're looking to make him, or he's at least going to try his hand, you know, as a starter. And obviously with a young rebuilding team after maybe Fulmer and Zimmerman, the who's now the grizzled veteran on the staff, how is the camp battle do you see proceeding with some of those starter spots, particularly it revolved around Norris and Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can pretty much lock down Fulmer, Zimmerman, and Mike Ferris, who they signed. And then it's going to be, Boyd and Norris will have the inside track for the last two. And then, you know, I really think Alex Wilson, like, to some degree, this is just going to give him space to work so that he doesn't have to work on kind of a reliever's routine and let him work on work on his off-speed pitches a little bit more in between outings. I have a hard time really believing he's going to end up being a starter. But the Tigers did, they picked up a minor league starter named Ryan Carpenter, who had a really good year in the Rockies organization last year. And he'll be in there with, like, Buck Farmer, maybe even Warwick Saupold, as those guys who are kind of just outside and might actually, get some spot starts through the year. But I do think, like, that top five is probably going to be pretty well set with the five I mentioned, including Norris and Boyd, who, you know, you've got to give the first crack to, because both of them are easily more talented than anyone we have. You know, close to the majors.
Brandon Day is our guest. He is with BlessYouBoys.com, the Tigers SB Nation site. Jim Cushlin is with us out at the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter for the Toledo Golf Show. Speaking of pitchers and tweeting, and I mentioned the Daniel Norris thing too. I thought it was kind of interesting. One of your colleagues, Ashley, wrote the piece about Justin Verlander tweeting us right in the feels, as she put it. Anthony Fenech, who's a friend that we often have on this program to do just what you're doing right now, give us some analysis of Tigers baseball, tweeted yesterday, Tigers pitchers and catchers have reported to spring training, but I still haven't seen Justin Verlander. We'll ask. And Verlander replied to it. It said, anyone got number 35 with the big bug eye emojis? Fulmer responds, I may or may not have asked for a number change. And then I love that Ashley threw in a, you know, Daniel Norris. Can you please just keep the? I'm sorry. Can you just keep this to yourself, please? It's hard enough as it is. So, you know, I mean, JV is still on their minds, and I'm sure he's going to continue to be on the minds of Tigers fans probably just about every 5 days when he should have been coming up for a start.
You know, I'm actually a little bit annoyed that they even gave his locker away. If it was me, I would leave that locker vacant, leave a jersey sitting in there, and listen, you know, 2020, you're coming back.
How depressing would that be every day to walk by that and look at it and think, how come there's nobody wearing that jersey, dang it? You know, I mean, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, I know they can't do that. But, yeah, no one should get that number either. That's a retirable number for sure when his days are done.
No question. You know, watch some third-string catcher in the AA level grab 35.
Yeah, Kush, give it to Brian Pena or something.
Kush has got another question, Jim.
You know, talk to me about some of the other possible camp battles as we're opening up. We kind of covered some of the pitching, and obviously same thing will apply on the position player side of things. Now, you got a couple of guys that are quote-unquote veterans like Nick Castellanos and, of course, Miguel Cabrera, you know, is still there. They still have one more year of Victor Martinez. But tell me some of the position camp battles because I have a feeling spots in the outfield is going to be something to watch over this spring.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can pretty much pencil in Castellanos in right field, and we're just going to have to kind of see how that goes defensively. The center field job is going to be interesting because, you know, Leonis Martin is a great defensive center fielder. He'll be out there, and that should help the pitching staff quite a bit. But they also picked up a guy named Victor Reyes, who's kind of a light-hitting switch hitter, who plays pretty solid defense in center field, and they got him in the Rule 5 draft. So they're going to have to try to find a way to mix him in there. You got Mikey Matuk, who will probably start in left field. So you've kind of got those guys. And then there's, you know, some younger players like Mike Gerber and Kristen Stewart, who are both, you know, pretty solid prospects, who probably will get a shot at some time this year. So, you know, we'll have those to kind of look at. In the infield, you know, there's kind of a utility man job open, and the Tigers have picked up a whole bunch of kind of utility infielders, Nico Goodrum, Alexi Amarista, Ronnie Rodriguez. There's a bunch of guys who are kind of gonna be vying for that Andrew Romine, I guess, type role. And so, you know, those guys we'll be looking at. There's also going to be a lot of competition in the bullpen because there are a lot of relief spots that are still kind of going to be up for grabs. So we'll be watching that carefully. I think Jamer Candelario probably has third base locked down, and we'll see Dixon Machado and Jose Iglesias, you know, in the middle infield. So the infield is more or less you know, solid right now. It's going to be the outfield, yeah, and the bullpen where there's probably a lot of movement.
Last thing before you run, Brandon Day, this is a former Tiger, but just give us your thought. Talking about J.D. Martinez and guys like Jake Arrieta, you know, there's been a big story. Tony Clark with the Players Association kind of fighting and making some comments about the owners, maybe alleging a little bit of collusion. How come they're not paying these big free agent guys who want big dollars, the money they want, that too many clubs are quote-unquote tanking or essentially slashing payroll down to nothing, and so these guys are remaining unsigned. Where do you think J.D. Martinez will end up, and how do you feel about that allegation of tanking?
I mean, I don't really like the tanking either, and I do think that, unfortunately, in the last two collective bargaining agreements, the players' union has basically given away something that they never would have given away under the previous leadership, which is to basically allow a form of a salary cap in the tax threshold and the taxes that come when you spend over that threshold. And if they had got something where there was almost also like a minimum spending, you know, possibly that could have worked out. But it's basically, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of smart baseball at this point to, if you don't think you have a chance to compete, to just go ahead and tank it, get the highest draft pick, sell all your players off for prospects, and to try to start rebuilding. But I think there is a side to it where, you know, owner's revenue has continued to grow pretty substantially, and the player's share of that revenue has definitely collapsed. You know, it's still growing, but it's growing much, much more slowly than the overall profits of the league are. And, you know, that's going to bring this to a head over the next couple years, and it could be kind of ugly. As far as J.D. Martinez,
you know, I wouldn't really want to pay him more than $125 million for 5 years. Even that seems like a bit too much for me for a guy who's going to be a great DH, part-time outfielder fairly shortly. At the end of the day, I think the Red Sox need him, and they'll probably get it done. But if it was me, I would really like to see the Arizona Diamondbacks swoop in and offer him a big deal and lock him up and take their shot at it. But, yeah, we'll have to see. It still seems like Boston is the place you'd still expect him to land despite all the acrimony.
A little bit of hard language between those two, though, in the last couple of weeks as J.D. has kind of accused them of some things. So we got to let it go because we are out of time. Really great stuff. Brandon Day, SBNation.com's Bless You Boys website. Great Tigers analysis, Brandon. We'll catch up again real soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good day.
You got it. Top of the hour. Sports Center is coming. We talk college basketball next right here on The Ticket.
The Bob Franz Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway on the extravaganza on this free-for-all Friday, although it's not really a free-for-all because we are pretty directed over the course of the next 45 to 50 minutes. We're going to talk college basketball, and then we're going to talk high school basketball. Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio, comes around at about 4:40 to lay out the weekend's big games, but now it is time to talk college basketball. It is not your normal college basketball interview, though. We're not talking with a coach. We're talking with a certified bracketologist this time. Chris Daubertine, who works for SB Nation, writes about college basketball and is indeed their staff bracketologist. And it looks like a whole bunch of brackets, if this were tournament time, got busted last night as a number of the top teams in the country fell in a crazy night of college basketball. Chris, thanks for joining us here on The Ticket in Toledo. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on once again.
Well, it is great to have you. So let's talk a little bit about what happened last night. It's funny, I was reading your piece on SB Nation, which I invite and encourage everybody to do, to go to SBNation.com and read Chris's work. Bracketology 2018, the selection committee's top 16 preview is already irrelevant. Could not be more true after what happened last night. But before we get into that, what did you make of the top 16 preview when they put it out last week?
Well, I thought it was kind of a lot of more of the same, kind of what we had gotten when they did it for the first time last year. Quality wins, and this is something I've been preaching in my writing all season. Quality wins are really what they're looking for, much more so than any potential bad losses a team might pick up. And we also learned a little bit more about, you know, how they're not really using advanced metrics like KenPom as much as we thought they were. The RPI is still kind of really, you know, their gold standard for metrics. So we learned a little bit, and it really kind of helped make things a little bit clearer in terms of how the rest of the bracket beyond the top 16 is going to look when Selection Sunday gets here.
How do you feel about what you just said, though? You said they kind of still use RPI as their top metric, and they're not really advancing beyond that. Are you okay with that? Is RPI still king for you?
No, our RPI is really just should be left in the past. I mean, it's one of those things that's not basketball specific. Yeah, they made tweaks to it to make it a little bit better, you know, from a basketball perspective, from the NCAA side of things. But you can use it for baseball. You can use it for checkers. You can use it for anything, really, just because of the basic formula. And having things like KenPom and Sagarin, you know, getting that little bit of extra basketball specific information in there and really thinking about how teams are actually going to do when they get in the tournament, I think is a little bit more helpful than something that is only results-based like the RPI is.
I'm glad to know that because I was going to host a checkers tournament in my poker room this weekend, so now I know I can how to bracket everything out. So you don't like it, but they do. Why do you think they do? Why do you think they still cling to that, as you call it, that, you know, that relic of the past when it comes to ranking teams?
I think it's a fair amount of just institutional inertia. It's what they're comfortable with. It's their own product, and I think that we might maybe see changes as we go further, as you know, they've gotten Ken Pomeroy, they've gotten Jeff Sagarin, they've gotten, you know, other people involved, but I think it's really a matter of kind of making that process a little more complete and a little more well-rounded and adding a little more time to it. It's just really institutional comfort more than anything else.
No, 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 no. You said institutional inertia, and I want to stick with that one because the show just got smarter. We may not be smarter, but we sound smarter when we have a guest on using terms like institutional inertia. I love that. Jim Cushman, go ahead.
And looking at some of this, obviously the big thing is we saw some of these teams kind of make, as we were going to point out, a little irrelevant what we just saw from that 1-6 through 16. Obviously, this is a very fluid tournament. You're going to have your locks, you're going to have your bubble teams, but there doesn't seem to be that one, oh, they're completely dominating. So it also, at the same time, I guess, even with Virginia, doesn't surprise me what we saw, especially yesterday as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really surprising. A couple weeks ago, I said it felt like the top three seeds in the tournament, which at the time were Villanova, Virginia, and Purdue, really, you know, put it down, mark it down on paper. They are going to be locked. They're going to be there. And here we are, you know, Purdue has already slid down out of the one line. You know, if Villanova loses to Xavier on Saturday, that's three losses in their last four games. Their top seed position is very much in doubt. And then you have teams like Kansas and Duke, you know, Texas Tech maybe. We've had Auburn kind of get up there. They're, you know, my fourth number one seed today. Teams that don't really have a traditional one seed profile are going to have a great shot of getting up there because nobody is really kind of distinguishing themselves other than really Virginia and Xavier at this point.
We're talking NCAA bracketology. It's still a very, very early time. Still around four, five, six regular season games left for most conference teams before we even get to the conference tournaments, which, of course, will then start to determine seedings and positioning in the NCAAs. But Chris Daubertine of SB Nation, their bracketologist, talking college basketball with us. What happened to the Ohio State Buckeyes last night? Aberration, a team that just has their number, since Penn State now is the team that has beaten them in each of their last two losses. Are they, you know, much better than that, but just kind of don't have the right matchup for that team? Or were they exposed last night in losing by 23 as being maybe not as good as what that record indicates?
No, I think they were due for having kind of a difficult game, and I think, as you said, this is a Penn State team that seems to really be a particularly bad matchup for them, having beaten them in Columbus. But, you know, really over the past few games, yeah, they beat Indiana, but they kind of struggled through that game. Illinois, you know, not an easy game, an easy victory for them. Yes, winning at Purdue was very impressive early. I think that's the kind of game you have to think about and say that Ohio State really is still, you know, a quality team because they were able to do that, even if the Boilermakers have kind of, you know, compounded that loss since. And then even that Iowa game at home wasn't really an easy thing. So I think, you know, we're in mid-February. The thing with the Big Ten in particular with the early conference tournament is you're playing a compressed league schedule, which is making, you know, fatigue a bigger issue for teams. So I really wouldn't really worry too much about Ohio State, even though they got their doors blown off yesterday. You know, you have a shot to go to Michigan and get another quality win. You know, just really be patient, be prepared for the Big Ten tournament, do well there, and then enjoy that week off, because the Buckeyes are one of the teams that's not going to have to worry about what's going to happen after that early Big Ten tournament.
Chris, let's talk about the Big Ten overall, because obviously, you know, Oklahoma's lost, is it four in a row now? Oklahoma is, I think, but Purdue now with three in a row and Ohio State getting that blowout loss. I want to focus on the Big Ten. How and Michigan State maybe, I don't know, would you say that they are a little bit underachieving this season thus far? I don't know if that's fair enough to say or not, but as far as the strength of the Big Ten, how strong is it nationally and how many teams can you realistically project going into making it into this field?
Well, I think the problem is not really the top of the Big Ten. I think that Michigan State is still, you know, the metrics, the advanced metrics, as I said, they love Michigan State. They love Ohio State. They love Purdue. They love the top of the league. But unfortunately, when you have approximately half the league outside of the RPI top 100, when you have actually half the league outside the RPI top 100, that's going to really hurt your metrics overall, and it's going to hurt your at-large team's chances. And when you factor in 14 teams in the Big Ten, you're playing 18 conference games, you can't have a true double round robin in that situation. You're going to have unbalanced schedules, and that really is going to hurt things. You know, we're seeing it with Nebraska, who, you know, already has 20 wins but is not anywhere close to being a lock for the NCAAs because they aren't playing the good teams twice. They're playing the good teams once on the road, and they're losing those games. So they're, you know, getting their wins against the bottom of the league, which isn't helping their computer numbers. You know, Penn State's on the flip side. They're playing the good teams. They're getting the opportunity to make a late case. So I think, you know, when you think about all that in mind, you're probably going to end up with four teams for sure, maybe five, and that's probably going to be it unless you get some surprise team stealing a bid in New York.
We're talking with Chris Daubertines, a college basketball writer for SB Nation. He is officially their bracketologist, getting a little projection of where things are after the NCAA committee gave us a Sweet 16, basically a Top 16 preview a week ago, kind of all blown out of the water right now. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, it's sticking with this Big Ten and a little bit of Ohio State, so kind of a follow-up from both of these things. With the Big Ten the way it is this year, Chris, with Ohio State's loss to get swept by Penn State, they only have one more regular season-wise. Not sure how the conference tournament at this point for the matchups will go. They get one more quality opponent in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I've seen some bracketologists and whatnot put Ohio State maybe as high as a 2-line. Does a game like that and the overall strength of Big Ten put them more at like a 4-5? And also, side note, Michigan is still ranked right now, but where do you see them in terms of their seed? Because I think those are two of the four, maybe five, that are obviously getting in. It's not like we're worried about the Buckeyes or even Michigan not being in the tournament at all. But I wonder, with the down Big Ten and things like what happened last night, how that's going to possibly affect their seed. I could see Ohio State, just because of last night, dropping from some people's 2 or 3 to a 4 or 5.
Yeah, when the committee gives you what they think the team is a month out, listen to it. Don't go 4 days later and put a team that is a 4 seed as a 2 seed, because that's not going to happen. So, you know, Ohio State loses, so I end up bumping them down from a 4 to a 5. I don't think there's really any path for them to get to a 2 or a 3. I thought that was kind of insane in the first place, just like I thought people putting Michigan State as a 1 or a 2 was the same thing, because the quality wins weren't there. And the committee, that's their thing. They want quality wins. The Big Ten doesn't offer that this year. That's a problem for those teams. So I think that Ohio State's probably looking more at a 4, maxing out at a 4, even with the Big Ten tournament title at this point, because the wins aren't there. Michigan has a similar problem. You know, they right now, I have them as a 9 seed because they still only have 2 top 50 wins, both on the road, but only one of those came in league play when they beat Michigan State. And, you know, you're looking at what they had ahead of them. Yeah, they have Ohio State ahead, but then they have 2 road games that are kind of in that borderline group 1 quality win category. So, you know, they can maybe boost themselves a little bit up to a 7 or an 8. But, you know, if they lose both those games, they're going to end up probably as a 10 or an 11. So they have to be very, very careful in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. They do, and I'm really glad you asked about Michigan, too, because they've been one of those teams that's just kind of, you know, all over the place. Sometimes they'll get on a run, and they look like one of the teams that could really make some noise, you know, as a mid-seed, depending on the bracket they get into. And other times they just look, you know, they kind of fall apart. So I'm really interested to see how they do. I mentioned Oklahoma, and I know you talked about it briefly. I was just mentioning that the Big Ten teams, by the way, if you wondered why I threw in Oklahoma when I asked about Big Ten, the Big Ten teams at the top are not the only ones struggling at the moment, because Oklahoma... Yeah. And Trae Young, who is, you know, perhaps the most talked about guy in college basketball this year, they're in the skids right now. And he, you know, as quickly as he can have a 43-point night, he can have that 0 for 9 or 1 for 10 shooting night as well. So can you give me your assessment of Oklahoma and what kind of a threat they might be once we get there?
That's a really good question, because this is a team that needs to start winning. As I put in my bracket post today, you know, you'd think that at this point the top 20 teams or top 5 seed lines would be locked down. But this is a team that's lost 4 in a row, that's lost 5 of 6, that's lost, you know, 7 and 9. They haven't strung, you know, consecutive wins together since the middle of January. It's been a month. So you have to really wonder what's going on here. But as quick as we say that, you know, they're struggling, they have 2 really good opportunities coming up this week. You know, in a, you know, really a 48-hour span, they host Texas, who's kind of also struggling a bit right now, and they have to go to Kansas. And, you know, Kansas is not the same team this year at home. They've already lost, you know, 4 home games this year, which is practically unheard of. So they really have a shot, if they can kind of get things together and take a little bit of the pressure off Trae Young, to get right back on track, you know, as soon as this weekend.
Well, but we are talking bracketology. Chris Daubertine, college basketball writer at SB Nation, their bracketologist. We're getting a look at some of the top teams in the country. If you had to, you know, rank right now, if you put together the top four seeds yourself, forget about what the committee gave us, right now after last night, and maybe last night doesn't impact it at all to you because you're looking at bigger picture and all of the metrics that you like, give me your top four right now.
The top four are Virginia, Xavier, Villanova, and even though I have Auburn as number one right now, I honestly think Kansas probably has a better case. And the thing that's really hurting them is they've had a couple bad losses, but I think that really they're going to probably end up being a stronger bet than Auburn's going to be long-term.
Why do you go Auburn then over them? Just because of the bad losses?
Yeah, right now the committee, they, you know, I think on Sunday Kansas would have had that last number one spot had they not lost, in particular the home game to Oklahoma State, because that's at this point, that's a group three loss. That's something you really don't want to have in your profile when you're that high up.
Can you tell me, we obviously here in Toledo, we cover the MAC pretty extensively. We talk to the coaches of Toledo and Bowling Green, and not that Bowling Green is really a factor right now, but Toledo is having a tremendous run. They've won 14 out of their last 16. They have the best record in the MAC, and of course, we know they've got to win, you know, the MAC tournament, and it's a one-bid league. How do you feel about mid-majors? And can a team that has had a, just as an example, had a season-long great run but doesn't quite have it all on a given shooting night in a tournament and doesn't win the tournament, is there room for a second team from leagues like that?
I would like for that to be the case, but I think that things – and even with these adjustments they've made to kind of grouping games in terms of RPI and you know, basing it more on location, I think the system is really set against mid-majors because, you know, you put so much emphasis on getting those teams, you know, quality wins in November and December to give themselves a good base for January through March in terms of improving their RPI and their strength of schedule. But mid-majors, they don't get the games against the major conference opponents unless it's on a neutral site in the tournament, you know, or they have to go on the road. And it just simply doesn't happen. And you just see it. It just seems more and more each year. And even with conference realignment where you see the best mid-major teams get brought up into, you know, leagues like the Big East and the American, that's really shrinking those chances for those mid-major teams that kind of go, you know, 17-1 or 16-2 in their leagues, from really having an opportunity to get in that large bid.
Jim Cushlin is with us as well, as always, talking to Chris Daubertine. Cush?
You know, I had a different question, but I'd love to follow up on this one. To that end, what mid-majors, your non-power conferences, which, you know, everybody has their own metric. I feel there's eight, the five power football plus Big East American, and even though they're really down this year, Atlantic 10. So outside of those eight, based on what you just said, Chris, what mid-major leagues can we expect or possibly expect to have multiple bids?
I think there's only really two shots at this point. I think New Mexico State had a somewhat of a shot until they lost to Utah Valley last night. There's not going to be a two-bid whack. I think Middle Tennessee is probably going to be in the discussion if they happen to lose the Conference USA tournament, because Western Kentucky, who beat Purdue in the ballot for Atlantis, I think is also in the picture. The Mountain West is the other, and Nevada got a big win on Wednesday by beating Boise State on their home floor. Nevada's been dealing with some injuries. They're still a really good team. They're kind of in that 9-seed range, and I think that if they stumble in Las Vegas, the Mountain West will end up getting two bids, and I really think that's probably going to be it.
What about the West Coast, where St. Mary's, Gonzaga, obviously in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're yeah. St. Mary's is 6-7 range. Gonzaga's in the top 16 at this point in my view, so I think they're in really good shape.
And, Jim, what was the other question you were going to do before the follow-up?
All right, but my other question, though, is going to one of those power leagues. I got to ask this status. I know Bob doesn't care. Most of our listeners don't. But after they went on the road and won at UVA, at Virginia last weekend, only the second loss of the season for Virginia, where are my Virginia Tech Hokies? Are they on the good side of the bubble now?
I got Virginia Tech as a 10 right now because, as you said, winning in Charlottesville, that's the number one RPI, you know, the number one RPI team right now. You aren't getting a better win this year than winning on the number one RPI team's home floor. So really, you know, they're in the top six in the RPI. The predictive metrics love them. They're ranging between 34 and 44 there. You know, I think they're at the point now where they are really, you know, inching towards safety. You know, a 10 seed's probably not there yet. You know, get a couple more wins. you know, looking at their schedule ahead, you know, they got three really good home games coming up with Clemson, Louisville, and Duke. You know, get two out of those three, and I think the Hokies are going to be in very good shape.
Yeah, you got to get your Hokies in there, Chris.
I had to. They're barely ever in the tournament, Bob. Come on.
Does it grind your gears that Virginia's number one?
A little bit, because they are Virginia, but they're as quality as anybody at the top of college basketball, and Tech beat them to split the season series, so I'm kind of happy.
Well, okay, then that's pretty good. If you split with the number one team in the country, or the perceived number one team at this point in time, I suppose you're doing all right. If you had to, I know you picked your top four, and you did so on the page, too, at SBNation.com, Chris. Just very early, mid-February, we're not even to the conference tournament yet, but who wins the national championship if you had to put, you know, a couple of bucks down on Vegas right now?
Oh, wow. This is kind of one of those, it's like Team A versus the field. I'm taking the field every time because
right.
I honestly could not tell you who I think is going to win at this point because it's just every time you pick a team, they go and they screw up. It seems like the only team that really hasn't that much is Virginia. And like I said, they just lost on Saturday and still, you know, were elevated up to number one in spite of that. So to say who I think it's going to be, this is a really, really tough one. I'm going to go out and
it's okay because we're not really placing the bet for you. You don't have to worry about it. You're not going to lose your money.
I'm going to say Xavier because it seems like they're really kind of rounding into form at the right time.
Wow, that's a bold pick, and it's good. It's a good thing we're not making the bet then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although depending on what odds you get, you might wish you had by the time this whole thing is said and done. But
exactly.
I can respect the really bold pick there. I like that a lot. Chris Daubertine, follow him, read him, bookmark SB Nation on your page in the college or in your browser, I should say, and the college basketball page in particular, and check out Chris's report on bracketology. Chris, thank you so much for spending the time. We appreciate it. Great stuff.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it. Our pleasure. Chris Daubertine joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. All right, I told you, we've covered a lot of ground. We did a lot of NBA. We did some baseball talk last hour. Now we got our college basketball fix in. What's left but high school basketball? That's right. And we're going to get some high school basketball talk coming up here. We're going to check back in with Jim Cushlin, who's live out at the Tam O'Shanter at the Toledo Golf Show. But he's going to talk with Bill Clark about the big high school matchups tonight and tomorrow throughout the weekend. That'll
and
be coming
the brackets
up next
are there
right
as well.
On the tick. What's that, Jim?
And the brackets as well, because those just came out. So we're talking a lot of postseason basketball
today. There you
today.
Go. Not only the matchups, but yes, the sectional brackets as well. That's all coming up with Bill Clark coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza final segment here of this Friday edition. And that, of course, means time to shift gears to the high school hardwood, of course, since it is still February, but we're coming up on the playoffs, but still have plenty of fun regular season games left to go. A pair of broadcasts, by the by, that we got tonight and tomorrow. Tonight is St. John's at St. Francis, 7 o'clock, the coverage time here on The Ticket. That'll be followed by the high school basketball scoreboard show. And then tomorrow evening, this is a makeup from the snowed out game last Friday as Central Catholic is at Whitmer. That'll also be a 7 o'clock coverage time tomorrow night here on The Ticket. And the man that will be calling those two games joins us now here on the extravaganza. We welcome back in the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. Bill Clark back in the program with us. Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Cush. How are you?
Hey, can't complain. Let's go over these a couple games because there are a couple of fantastic matchups in the track the next two nights. First, of course, up tonight, St. John's is at St. Francis. 7 o'clock, the coverage time again here on 106.5, The Ticket. These are some of the teams that are trying to battle it out for some of the top spots. In fact, both games today and tomorrow, that's essentially what we have here as we're closing down the regular season.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And still a little bit of excitement on the line, especially for St. John's. They've got a chance to clinch another track championship. They were 14-0 last year. They're trying to go 14-0 right now. They've got a 25-game winning streak in track games, and they're looking for number 26 tonight against St. Francis. And obviously, when these two teams get together, we talk about it all the time. You don't throw the record books out the window. You don't even open them because these two teams go after it tooth and nail. St. Francis has come back a lot over the last couple of years behind Travis Lewis running things over there, but that's the positive. The negative is St. John's has beaten St. Francis 17 straight times. So obviously St. Francis would like to change that and also pick up a win and kind of keep their faint playoff or their faint track championship hopes alive. Right now St. John's goes to work at 11-0, and St. Francis has two losses. So if St. John's wins tonight, they clinch the title. St. Francis has to win tonight if they have any hope at all. But right now I think both teams, besides the track implications, are trying to make sure they're healthy and ready to rock and roll when the tournament comes around. But it'll be an exciting atmosphere. I talked to both schools earlier this week, and the game was sold out Monday afternoon. So, yeah, if you don't have a ticket, then just pull up your radio and listen to us on 106.5 The Ticket. We'll try to make it sound like you're right there. But it should be a great atmosphere. The Pit is a great place to play a high school basketball game, and it will be loaded to the rafters tonight when these two teams get together. And it's kind of exciting, too, from the standpoint there's going to be a lot of talent on the floor for both teams. I mean, you've got three of the top four scorers in the game. Vince Williams is number one. Houston King is number three for St. John's, and Jackie Harris at 16.5 points is the number four scorer in the league. He plays for St. Francis, obviously. And the number two rebounders, first and second rebounders in the league, with Vince Williams number two and Jackie Harris leading the league and rebounding at almost 10 per game. So there's going to be a lot of talent on the floor. It's going to be a full 32 minutes of exciting basketball. And the first time these two teams played back in December, St. John's just lit it up. They won 86-65. Vince Williams had 35. Houston King had 29. As I said, St. John's shot 67% from the field, 71% from behind the long line, and they were 17 of 23 from the free throw line. So they weren't going to get beat by anybody that night. But St. Francis did not have one of their better nights. And hopefully they will look to change that tonight against St. John's.
Well, they're certainly, as you mentioned, going to have the crowd on their side, obviously, at home and sold out since Monday. I love hearing random things like that. Bill Clark, of course, joins us talking some high school basketball. Only a couple more weeks here, the regular season, before we get into the tournament. But before we get there, there's also a game tomorrow night, Central Catholic at Whitmer. Neither of these schools, particularly Central Catholic, having the years on the court they would like to have seen. And of course, this is a makeup from all those snowed out games from last week. What can you tell us about this matchup that we'll have for you 7 o'clock tomorrow night for a Saturday evening affair here on The Ticket?
Well, I think the first thing to say is Central Catholic needs to play a lot better than they played the first time, and TJ Hunt, their head coach, would be the first one to say that. It was a 22-point win for Whitmer when they played back on January 5th over at the Sullivan Center. So Whitmer won it 44-22, and Central just could not get out of their way. They were still feeling a little bit of those football muscles from the long playoff run, but TJ Hunt is not using that as an excuse. He talked to me this week and basically said that the first quarter of pretty much every one of their games has been their worst quarter. So they need to get off to a fast start. And Whitmer's playing some great basketball. Trey Soroka running the show out there, the point guard, he just plays with the guts of a burglar. You got Leon Hughes inside having a nice game and a nice season inside. Ed Colbert can knock it down from outside. And then Riley Keller has moved into the starting lineup. Not necessarily going to score a lot of points, but he sometimes draws the toughest defensive assignment from the other team. So Whitmer is ready to go. They're looking to keep going strong as they look to get into the playoffs. And Central would certainly like to change things that happened back on the 5th and try to erase that 22-point deficit as they get ready to go into the playoffs.
We're talking with Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, here on the Extravaganza pair of games tonight and tomorrow night here on the Ticket. St. John, St. Francis, 7 o'clock tonight. Central Catholic at Whitmer, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. But much more fascinating is a couple of weeks from now, the playoffs will get underway. In fact, I can start the announcements now. The first playoff games we'll have for you will be a sectional final doubleheader 2 weeks from today on March 2nd. So, Bill, let's break down where a lot of these teams here from the area got slated. There's two Division I Toledo districts. Let's start there because, as you were mentioning, for our first game tonight, St. John's, they have the number one spot in this particular bracket. They'll take on Ashland, but you also have I'll just read off the matchups real quick. The sectional semis, you'll have Central Catholic against Fremont Ross. So that's a track battle right there. Wait at Finley in the other one. Central Catholic Fremont Ross winner will get Bowser. St. John's, the number one, as mentioned, they get Ashland. Anthony Wayne awaiting the winner of Wait Finley. Lima Senior will also take on Springfield. Those last set of matchups were the March 2nd sectional finals. Break down Toledo 1 district, the Division 1 for us, Bill.
Well, St. John's, obviously, rightly so, has got the first seed, no doubt about that. And they're playing, obviously, a team that not too many people are familiar with, and I'm sure St. John's is not familiar with it, but they will be by the time the 2nd of March rolls around. Ashland's the number 21 seed in the district. So looking at that number right there, you got to believe that St. John's will be moving into the district semifinal over at UT on the 7th. The interesting game, I think, is one of those rat tail games you just talked about, Tush, and that's a number 14-seeded Central Catholic against number 15-seeded Fremont Ross. You mentioned it's a track matchup. It'll be the third time these two teams have played against each other. And the fact that they're both kind of ranked a little lower in the 21 teams that are out there, it's got to be one of those games where, you know, anything can go. And, you know, you play, the seniors don't want to take the uniform off. So it's one of those games where you're just going to put it all on the floor and do what you can. So I think that should be an interesting game. And then the winner of that, as you mentioned, gets Bowser. And the Joe Guerrero's kids are playing very well. They're obviously going to be in the City League Final Four, which we will have on 106.5 The Ticket starting next Tuesday night. But, Joe Guerrero's got those kids playing really well. It's a high-powered offense. So whoever wins that Central Catholic Fremont Ross game will have their hands full with Bowser, who happens to be the 12th seed. And then those two winners between St. John's and Ashland, Bowser, and then the winner of Central Catholic Fremont Ross will move over to the district semifinal. In the lower part of that bracket, that's going to be played at Fostoria. The upper bracket we just talked about will be at Genoa. But at Fostoria, you got to like Lima Senior, I think, coming out of that one bracket. They take on Springfield. And then it's Anthony Wayne against the winner of the Wake-Finley game, as you mentioned. And I think Finley is one of these dangerous teams. I think they can beat Wake. I don't think they'll have any trouble with the Indians. And then they are the number 9 seed. They take on Anthony Wayne, the number 8 seed. And we all know what happens in the NCAA tournaments when you get 8 and 9s and those kinds of
toss-up game, yep.
Matchups, yeah. You never know which way it's going to go. So I think that could be a real interesting game. I think I'd give the nod just a little bit to Finley. I think if they come in and shoot like they can, I think they could cause some problems for Anthony Wayne. Lima Senior really should have no trouble with Springfield. Kyle Linenham's kids play very, very tough at Springfield, but I just don't think they've got the muscle to take on Lima Senior. So the district semifinal, I look out of that first number one Toledo district, I think might be Bowser and St. John's in the upper game, and the lower game could be Finley against Lima Senior. So three track members and a City League member going into that district semifinal, which will be on the 7th of March.
And these are classified, by the way, as two separate districts technically, right. But it's like one giant district. So let's go to Toledo 2, the quote-unquote second part, if you will, of this giant district. And over there, the top seed is from the NLL. Two seed is Southview. Northview is in the 5 spot. You also have St. Francis. They're the 3. Start is the 4. All of them will start in the sectional finals. Southview getting Rogers. And then in the sectional semis, Perrysburg's in there. They have a game against Madison Comprehensive. You also have Clay taking out Bowling Green, and then Whitmer against Woodward, a 6-20 matchup if you want to go by the seeds. How is the Toledo 2, or the bottom part of these games will be played a little closer to home? You mentioned Genoa and Foster in the first part. These will be at Start and at Central Catholic for the locations. Break down this part of the bracket for me, and who do we got winning these two districts?
Well, I think you start out with the rat tail game, Perrysburg number 10 and Madison Comprehensive number 13. I'm going to go with Dave Boyce. I just think if you give him a chance to put a game plan together against a team that, you know, obviously people around here aren't that familiar with, I'll put Perrysburg into the sectional final, or the sectional semi, or the sectional final, I beg your pardon, against Sylvania Northview. So that'll be a great NLL matchup. And you got to give the nod to Northview, because this is the way they played this year, and they've taken Perrysburg to task during the regular season. So that should be an interesting game to see who gets into the district semifinal in that particular bracket. Sylvania Southview on the bottom against Rogers. Rogers is one of those surprise teams. They've played very well in City League games, but they're below 500, 4 or 5 games below 500 overall. So based on that and the fact that Stan Joplin's kids are number 2 as far as seeding goes, I'll give Southview the nod there. So a very interesting district semifinal on the 8th over at the University of Toledo could very well be Sylvania Northview against Sylvania Southview for round 3, because they will also have played the last regular season game against each other. So they could play each other twice within a matter of 8 to 9 days. So that could be kind of interesting.
That's always fun for rivalries, of course,
by the way. Absolutely. The whole city of Sylvania will be at University of Toledo on the 8th for that one, no doubt about that. In the lower part of that bracket, St. Francis, the number 3 seed, and that's a good pick for them. I think they deserve to be number 3. They've got they got 16 wins going into their game tonight against St. John's. They've played a very competitive schedule, and they'll take on the winner of Clay and Bowling Green, and no matter who wins that game, I think St. Francis will move into the district semifinal, and they will take on Whitmer takes on Woodward. I'm going to give the nod, obviously, to Whitmer there. I think Ryan Brown's kids are just playing too well, and Woodward is just struggling a little bit this year. And then, of course, they're going to take on, if Whitmer wins that game, they take on Start. So there's another neighborhood battle. You got Sylvania, Northview, and Southview at the top, and then in the sectional final, you got Start, I think, against Whitmer. So that should be very interesting as well. Out of those two, I think the Start-Whitmer game could be a toss-up. It depends what Start team shows up. If they play the way they have played most of the season in the City League, you might give the nod to Start. But I've seen Whitmer 4 or 5 times this year, and Ryan Brown's team, I'm not going to call them Jekyll and Hyde because they're a good basketball team. But if they play one of their better games, I think they can beat Start, which would set up a lower part of that bracket in the other district semifinal. It would be Whitmer and St. Francis, another track matchup. So that should be very interesting. And, of course, all the games we just talked about we'll have right here on 106.5 when it rolls around.
And that'll be so much fun, some of these games. You get possible rivalry games. That's what it's kind of all about. We're talking with Bill Clark, voice of high school sports, football in the fall, of course, basketball here in the winter. We're breaking down some of the brackets which came out this past Sunday for the upcoming high school playoffs. We'll start our coverage by with a sectional final doubleheader 2 weeks from today on March 2nd. Let's go to another division, another Toledo district, but in Division 3, as there's some fascinating teams all spread around from our listening area. Cardinal Stritch out of the TAC being one of them, and there they get the 2 seed, Archibald the 1. This is a fascinating district. It may be Division 3, not Division 1, but a lot of interesting things I think could happen here.
Yeah, it's interesting too, Kush, because of the way the brackets are set up. They have a lot more sectional semifinal games in that particular Toledo district in Division 3. Liberty Center takes on Swanton, Otsego takes on Whitmore, Eastwood tangles with Evergreen, and then on the lower part of the bracket, you've got Gibsonburg at Lake, Delta at Rossford, Northwood at Genoa. So you've got a lot of teams that are familiar with each other, as opposed to what was going on in Division One when you've got Ashland coming in and Madison Comprehensive coming in. Those teams obviously are not very familiar with Toledo basketball fans. But here, they are very, very familiar with each other. Archibald, the number 1 seed, Cardinal Stritch, the number 2, they've placed themselves directly into the sectional final. Archibald will get the winner of Liberty Center and Swanton. That's an 11-13 matchup. And it's interesting because some of the sectional semifinal matchups are very close as far as the seeding goes. Swanton's number 11, Liberty Center's 13, Otsego is 6 versus number 4, Woodmore, and Eastwood is 5, Evergreen is 7. So those are all toss-up games, I think. Whoever ends up coming out and maybe getting fast starts, there's going to be some nerves because you lose, you go home. So you put everything on the line. But Archibald's waiting for the winner of the Liberty Center-Swanton game, and then Otsego-Woodmore winner takes on Eastwood and Evergreen. So that should be interesting. Those will be played out at Anthony Wayne. Cardinal Stritch again, the number 2 seed, as you mentioned. They jump right into the sectional final, and they await the winner of Lake and Gibsonburg. 9 versus 12. Delta in Rossford is 8 versus 10, and Northwood versus Genoa is 3 versus 14. So you figure number 3 Genoa will get to the sectional final and probably take on Rossford. And if the numbers are anything and the coaches know how they voted, you think Lake would beat Gibsonburg, so that would set up Lake and Cardinal Stritch in that other sectional final before they head over to Central Catholic on the 8th. To play their district semifinals. So Cardinal Stritch, I think, is an interesting team from the standpoint that they won the TAC, first time they've had a basketball championship in the history of the school. They took care of that last week. And they've been making relatively deep runs into the tournament the last couple years, and I see no reason for that to stop this year. They've got a great set of 3 guards. They have a nice inside game, and Jamie Kaczmarek has those kids playing really well. They're believing in themselves. So it'll be fun to watch Division 3 and how far Cardinal Stritch goes, and depending on how far they go, we might be putting a couple of their games on the radio as well as they move down the tournament trail.
No doubt about it. I'm very fascinated to see what Cardinal Stritch does. Yes, as you mentioned, they've had some tournament runs down here before, but this is the first time they're going to come in with a league championship, and I wonder how much that might change the game. I think they're very deserving of the two seed in that particular district. Don't sleep on Archibald. There's a reason they got the number one. Hey, there's one other little division real quick I want to ask you, because there are some other teams here in the area, a few scattered in Division II in a different district in three, but there's a couple teams in Division Four in the Napoleon District that I want to get your thought on real quick, and that is Toledo Christian is the three into the sectional final. Maumee Valley Country Day was having a very good season themselves. They're the number two and could possibly play an Emmanuel Christian in their sectional semi. And for what it's worth, you also have an Ottawa Hills Montpelier matchup in the sectional semis. Basically, in this one, and there's some powers, even though for Division Four with Stryker and Pettitsville is the one and the four in here, but what are the chances we could possibly see out of this Division Four a Toledo Christian or even a Maumee Valley Country Day do some noise?
I think that's very possible. I think Toledo Christian has had kind of a little bit of a roller coaster season, but for the most part, they've played very good. But Pettitsville, I tell you, they when they turn on the juices for the tournament, Pettitsville usually does very well. The Blackbirds are out there flapping their wings, and they get the winner of Hilltop and Edgerton, so you figure they're going to move to the district semifinal. And Toledo Christian has to beat the winner of Fayette Eden, and I don't think that'll be a problem, so the Eagles should move there too. So it could be a 1-3 matchup in the district semifinal. And then you mentioned Maumee Valley Country Day, the number two seed coming out of that lower bracket. They have a chance to take on Emmanuel Christian, another team from the TAC. Again, that would be the third time they got together. I'd put Maumee Valley into the district semifinal. And as far as Ottawa Hills taking on Montpelier, you mentioned sleeping. I would never sleep on John Lindsay when his kids start to play in the tournament. All of a sudden they jump to another gear. So I'm going to take Ottawa Hills to beat Montpelier. And then number four Stryker against number five Ottawa Hills, there's that toss-up again. And I'm going to go with the local guys. I'll put Ottawa Hills against Maumee Valley Country Day in that other district semifinal. So Division Four could be very interesting, too, as we move into the middle of March.
It is going to be a fun time. 2 weeks from now, we'll have some high school basketball postseason broadcast, sectional final doubleheader. Incidentally, though, a lot of these sectional semis we're mentioning are either played on Tuesday the 27th or Wednesday the 28th. So basically, we are under 2 weeks until the real fun for high school basketball really gets underway, and we'll have a continuous coverage essentially as long as local teams are alive all throughout as far as they can possibly go in this postseason tournament coming up here in a couple weeks. Bill Clark, you can catch him tonight and tomorrow night, 7 o'clock the coverage time, both nights. It's St. John, St. Francis tonight, Central Catholic at Whitmer tomorrow. We always appreciate the time. Have a great couple of calls. We'll be listening, Bill, and we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, Coach. Have a great weekend.
Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here at Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. Lots and lots of fun coming up on high school basketball hardwood. I can't wait for some of these tournament games. We're going to have, again, a bunch of them for you here on 106.5 The Dig, and maybe the occasional one on Talk Radio 100.7. And we're going to try to follow as many of the local teams as far as some of them can go. So that means if some of them end up going to state, we're going to follow them all the way there. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out here with us on this Friday. Lots of high school stuff, as we mentioned, tonight. There's also the scoreboard show immediately following St. John, St. Francis. All that gets underway at 7. After the scoreboard show, we'll get you your Olympic update today in Pyeongchang with the courtesy of our friends at West 1. Then over on Talk Radio 100.7, a Bowling Green doubleheader tonight. Basketball is at Buffalo, 6:30 the coverage time. And then hockey. Bowling Green hockey on the long road trip all the way up in Alaska at Anchorage. 10:30 for you Night Owls, the pregame time for an 11 p.m. faceoff. Hey, they're in Alaska. What more can I say? First and two for the Falcons. We'll have that on Talk Radio 100.7 as well. Then we got some college basketball as well as high school basketball. And then